Thank you for the invitation, Professor, and thank you everyone for being present. So to introduce myself, I am Daniel Fraga. I am an experienced designer and a design theorist, and I've worked in virtual reality. I'm a trained architect. I'm currently working with artificial intelligence. I also have a podcast called Technosocial, which I would invite you all to have a look at. And in this talk, I think it's very pertinent to bring up my view on the notion of ontological design and what kind of positive, creative answer it can represent to the problems that modernity have brought us to the edge of the abyss of end time, and an answer to our disorientation in the face of it. As I see it, this is a sort of a positive, affirmative answer to it, to say that the only way is through. In the next few minutes, I want to point out the sense in which reality is also a technical problem, and how perception can be and already is by many creatively manipulated. And thus, I will get to the point where the design of subjectivity can be our greatest tool to navigate this virtual wilderness where we are about to embark upon. So the key assumption of ontological design is this: when we create the objects and the contexts that surround us, we are in fact designing our very selves. In other words, first we design our tools, and then they design us in return. And this feedback loop is the central idea of ontological design as a discipline. It constitutes its chief operating principle and the operative engine behind it. So it's very connected to technology as well. According to Marshall McLuhan, media technology paradigms have a deep impact on human perception and on the organization of societies. Marshall McLuhan pointed out three paradigms. First, the paradigm of written media and writing as a technology that invented many of the ways through which we think about the world. Secondly, there was the electric communication paradigm, television, radio. And then finally, what we're seeing today is the emergence of the networked paradigm, the paradigm of our age, of artificial intelligence, of the internet, and of technology as we understand it today. And it is accelerating, as we are obviously at the edge of the abyss. When we first picked up a pen in school, we were irreversibly changed into a writer. We learned how to write. Our hands physically changed. Our brain physically changed. Technology has therefore designed us, has invented us as a writer. And so the same thing happens with other technologies, such as those like the electricity and the internet. Those things have also extended into our very being. They, for example, extend our memories. What is a notebook, if not a prosthetics for my memory? What is a car, if not the extension of my locomotive ability? And therefore, again, we come back to the idea of ontological design, that as we design these technologies, they can impact us. And so we can have a way out, a creative answer through here. Today, we live in the network paradigm, and the internet as a technology is really altering our understanding of reality at an ontological level, it can be said. The very ways we understand our being is radically altered. It enables a new and advanced form, not only of being, but of existing within capitalism. Contemporary capitalism colonizes not only what we desire, but how we desire. It inscribes us into what Lyotard calls the libidinal economy. Our desires are now commodities. Inside of my body, my will and my lust have been inscribed into a massive, massive machine. Wherever there's a new desire, there's a new market, and there's an opportunity for someone to get rich. And that is true for everything, including buying stock for Zoom, on which we are all speaking now, which is obviously enabling this type of philosophical conference. And so itself, there is some implications in there. So it can be said that we are all writhing in this technological beast. Our desire is the beast on which Babylon, to quote Aleister Crowley, or even the harlot of Babylon is writhing. It is, its fuel is now a digitized libido, which is already integrated into this machinery, of this great machinery. We are contributing, therefore, it can be said, for the building of a massive temple, a massive golem, so to speak, that is made out of data. This is perhaps a metaphorical way to address the problem, but I think it does justice to it. this massive God-like devouring entity is both the Antichrist, but it is also Syntheos, the God that we create, according to the work of philosopher Alexander Barth. So the desire that we cast out unto the world becomes autonomous. The society of the spectacle of Guy Debord is the autonomous march of the non-living, of our collective phantasms. And so what happens is that the noosphere, the sphere of mind and the sphere of ideas, it might come to the point that it's going to cephalize. It's going to gain a head, to gain awareness. And we all know this. Gog and Magog are unleashed from the Katehon as the acid rains of the digital flood fall, the rain of the deluge. And yes, it is already raining. Let me talk about time and then drive it home with the role of ontological design in the middle of all of this. Plastic scales. You can make one bottle, and by very similar processes, you can make a million bottles of plastic because plastic has scaling properties. But attention, human attention, which is fundamental to how we desire, which is fundamental to how we become subjects, does not scale because it's prime matter, to use a very capitalist and industrial metaphor, its prime matter is time. It's also an alchemical metaphor. So by colonizing our desire, capitalism is colonizing that which we cast our attentions towards. Attention is indissociable from time. And in this sense, we can therefore say that the internet today is inaugurating a new regime of time itself. Some people say that the only lesson of virtual reality is that teaches us that all reality is already in a way virtual. Or maybe you can reverse that to say which one came first. But there's a disruption indeed of the time order that our species more or less evolved for. And we've been thrown into a place where time is a resource to be extracted from us. Our attention is the most precious resource in techno-capitalism because it commands all other resources. Time is the core resource being forcibly extracted from us by the deceptive and cunning user experience design patterns of digital media, social media feeds, and the whole civilizational paradigm that we have entered in. So in this process, we are being left without sky, without the ability to articulate our own lack of freedom, our own oppression. That's why you can say that philosophical war, psychological warfare is not only something that the CIA or Silicon Valley does, is not only a bad guy who is actually engaging in it, it is of the paradigm, it is something of the age, part and parcel of the tiger itself. If anything, we are the tiger, we are the beast. And so as this new layer, the new sphere emerges on the earth, one of the consequences is that competition increases as well. It increases in volume. One of the consequences is forced generation warfare, psychological warfare, the war in the field of mind and the war in the field of ideas, something that is very connected to noumenia itself. And this is the state of war. Mind is the battle space. Mind is the weapon of battle. And mind is the reward of battle, to paraphrase Patrick Ryan, simultaneously. It's like an unholy trinity. To paraphrase Giorgio Agamben, we can also say that all of us are already civilian soldiers without knowing it. And the great stroke of luck of the military class's terrorism is that nobody recognizes it. People don't recognize the militarized part of their identity or their consciousness. To add to this, to add to the dimension in which techno-capitalism is actually waging war on us, it is indistinguishable from war at this point. The memes of ontological production have been seized by techno-capitalism, by the war machine. And we are therefore in the process, to take a little bit to what Merim was saying, in the process of continuous defeat, processual defeat, intrinsic defeat. Maybe it's not only of our time, maybe it's always already true since the beginning of time. But now we are being even colonized at the level of how we desire, what we desire, how we sense make, and even ontology. So how does ontological design enter in here? Well, I think it could represent a sort of mimetic self-defense. It is the philosophical idea that one can design one's own environment and therefore protect one's own being from the assaults of current circumstances. It is both an answer to, say, a 60s style Deleuzian emancipatory project, as well as a new political Second Amendment for the mind. So it is both things simultaneously. It is, I would say, beyond the political spectrum in that sense, because it's a conceptual technology. It is the idea that just like architecture does for buildings, or user experience design does for phones and applications and digital platforms, design can be looked at and formulated as having a deep implication on existence, on ontology itself. And that's where we come to the answer of becoming. It is not designing human beings, but human becomings as this continuous process. Now we'll get to that in a minute. But Paul Virilio said that when you invent the ship, you also invent the shipwreck. When you invent the plane, you also invent the plane crash. When you invent electricity, you also invent electrocution. Every technology carries with it its own negativity, which is invented at the same time as technical progress. He describes, using these sentences, the integral accident. He says that with every new technology, there is also a new kind of disaster, new kinds of potential accidents. So it's no joke that by formulating ontological design, we are also formulating a very deep prison of self, a prison through which AI can really take over humans. But that is the reverse mapping. By looking at the negative, we can also look at the power embedded within it. So therefore, ontological design is the design discipline concerned with designing human experience. And like I said, it goes under the idea that by designing objects, spaces, tools, and experiences, we're designing human beings themselves. And that this ability to design human beings is very central to survive the technological shifts of the coming decades with even a semblance of agency. Subject and object are not split. Like Heidegger suggested, let's forget this Cartesian split between mind and body, between self and world. They are continuous and self-feedbacking. They are processes. And it's a principle that teaches us that we have extended bodies, that our notebooks are as much part of our brains as our frontal cortex. And so this feedback loop is the central idea, is the idea that by designing discourses, designing habits, norms, regimes of truth, designing power and its flows, designing the associative networks of the body mind, we're designing how we actually plug into this extended libidinal economy and noosphere. Now, what you do when you design, that's a question that I don't answer. You can design anything. However, today we need to contend with the technological possibilities that such a powerful design can come up. Just wanted to make a quick reference to Lucas. You mentioned something about the mythopoetic symbolic property that needs to be reinvoked. That resonates a lot with me. I believe that ontological design has an aspect of necessitating creative signification. We can utilize creative apophenia, a sort of renewed animism, to actually step up into the role of being the valuators of our own lives. Perhaps there's space to create new bridges between man and authenticity. Perhaps there's space to invent a future where we are not dissolved in the Armageddon. And so just to finalize, like I said, man is not an end in himself, but a bridge, a process of becoming. In this sense, I am still very Deleuzian. And so ontological design might be a conceptual steering wheel with which we will eventually learn to manage this century and beyond. So what is left for us then? To create. Create what? That's a question better answered by the designer. But because of the current technological status where we are in right now, creation has deep ontological implications. The future is invading us at the speed of broadband, and we need to understand how to cultivate our own memetic fields to survive. And I say that we should ride this integral accident. I think we should set sail because the digital flood is already upon us. And what makes us human? What is the radical subject if not the creator? The way I believe we pay homage to the tree of life that flows through our very body and that connects us with the origin of the world, the way that we pay homage to tradition with a big T, to the tradition of the world and of life, is We create. There's no going back now. We create and we answer the questions of life with a yes, because death is certain. We need to be in relation to it. Thank you very much.